So did you decide to get that IE tune?
I am looking to get it. So I plan to. I reached out to the guys. We'll see what happens. But yeah, I do want that tune real bad.
I still feel like I'm struggling with the numbers on that one.
Yeah, so the numbers are kind of crazy, which kind of had me really sold on it. And for people who don't know, it's for my Volkswagen, for the GTI.
Yeah, you just got the GTI not too long ago.
Yeah, and, you know, stock, the car comes with a little over 220 horsepower, right. You know, whatever, as advertised or whatever. Yep. But this IE Stage 1 tune, Stage 1, that means no bolt-ons required. That they advertise that this tune is going to get you up to 300.
So you're a basic B.
But the tune will get me to 310?
Yeah, that feels like a lot.
Yeah, it does seem like a lot, and especially because the Golf R's are only coming at 300 horsepower with a better turbo.
Now,
so like, I don't know, a little skepticism there, but I mean that's crazy.
Yeah, I mean they say that they're on the stock car that they're dyno red like 237 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, arguably they probably have a dyno that reads a little higher. I'm not really sure what dyno they have, but with that said, even going from 237 on their dyno to 310 is really good power for a tune.
It's a big jump.
Especially on something that's like, we were talking about a 2.0 liter turbo engine.
Yeah.
That's a pretty substantial jump.
That's a really big jump, which is why, again, I feel so just, wow, I gotta get that is what I'm thinking.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I mean, I think the part that like I'm not really sure what to make of is just how much power that car is making without really doing much. Like, there are just, it really begs that, like, you know, which of the cars that really have that ability to make a incredible gains without having a ton of money out of pocket as far as like bolt-ons and stuff, right? Like, which cars can you bolt some stuff on, flash their tune, stuff like that, and really get these cars, you know, increase in horsepower to really take off quickly, you know?
Right. I mean, when I first got into the love of cars and all that kind of stuff, 13 years ago or maybe more than that or whatever it was, turbo cars were not nearly as common as they are now. Like, they were not.
That's fair.
They weren't. I know for sure they weren't.
Right, which is why I think the three, you know, the cars that stuck out the most were Evos, STIs.
WRXs, exactly. Yeah, of course, like, right. They stuck out so, so much.
Right.
And the Mazda Speed 3s, GTIs, mm-hmm. etc. Those stuck out so much because of that. And then anything else that was putting down good power was a V6 or more, you know?
Yep.
Whatever, higher, I mean, more cylinders. I don't know. Some of these platforms today, I guess there's a lot of things. Obviously, if you have force induction, it's going to help out with getting bolt-ons and power.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt. I mean, look, so let's think about these. Like, obviously, if you could find any, you know, DSMs were really good at making good power.
Yep.
Didn't take a lot of money, and there was a lot of, like, old-school hacks that you could do without freaking the car out to be able to increase the horsepower quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Evos, I think, were the same way. Subarus, you could do that, but I felt like with Subarus, and again, I'm coming from having owned all these cars, right? Subarus were a little tougher. They didn't seem to want to make nearly as much power. It seems like they were tuned well enough that you could get some more power out of it.
I think I know a guy that would definitely disagree with that.
Yeah, I know, but here's the thing. I'm not saying that you can't make good power with them. That's not what I'm saying. Right?
Yeah.
I'm just saying that, like, I think dollar for dollar.
Mm-hmm.
No, that's not what I meant. I meant dollar for horsepower. I think you can, like, an Evo will kick the Subaru's butt.
I think we brought Steve onto the podcast. I think he would totally rebuttal that.
Well,
just
didn't
saying.
We do it one time? Didn't we call him?
Oh, you
up?
Called him. But he said that he disagrees.
He said he disagreed. But then I said to him, like, about, like, you know, so you don't think for double iron. He was like, well, and I was like, yeah, that's good enough for me. You know what I mean? So there's that. But like, there's other cars that I think do that well. I think, let's talk about some natural aspirated stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, again, bolt-ons, I think, become relative. So I know we're playing in whatever argument here. But I think a C6 Z06 is a amazing example of this. You put heads, and yes, I know it's heads. Does that really count as a bolt-on part?
Yeah, that's
iffy. But with an LS engine, if you're, you know, equipped to do it, heads kind of are a bolt-on part.
Okay.
All right, so You know, with heads, intake, exhaust, and a tune, the cars make like another 100 and something horsepower. I mean, these are cars that are doing 550 to 600 horsepower on pump gas.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that's crazy. So there's that car. I'm thinking, like, you know, obviously you have the regular naturally, you know, the regular forced induction stuff. I think that, you know, obviously Civic Type R is certainly one of those cars that may fall in there, although I don't know how much power you really can make on just simple bolt-on stuff.
Of the Type R's in particular, I actually don't know. I would imagine that Honda tuned that car probably
pretty aggressively.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Like, so I would imagine that. For myself, I had a tuned 9th-gen Civic Si K24 engine. And
not the same, though.
No, not the same at all. So, and a generation before the Civic Type R even came to the States. But, you know, that's a 2.4 liter. And as advertised from the factory, comes with 201 horsepower. That car that I had was actually tuned by Raphael from DRT Racing, who at the time, under my knowledge, was one of the best Honda tuners in New York.
I think you'd have some people to dispute with you, but I know Raph was super knowledgeable.
Yeah. So, but you know, that's the way it was, you know, kind of, I looked at it at the very least, but, I remember that car full bolt-ons, everything except for headers at that point. I mean, I had everything except for headers, and, that car to the wheels stock put out, I think 182, to the wheels or something like that. And then after the tune, after full bolt-ons, put a lot of money into the car. I was a young guy. And after the tune, I think you're only putting close to 210 to the wheels.
Yeah, I mean,
like, you're not getting substantial power.
Yeah,
so
that's not...
So for the Honda guys, when you think of a Honda pulling up to the drag strip and you see a Honda there and you go, oh, crap, you see an old Civic, you go, damn, I'm gonna get it blown away. These guys are doing so much more than just bolt-ons.
Yeah, but look, I think the issues with that is that when we start talking about bolt-on, I think depending on what car you have, for example, let's just throw this out there. You don't have to K-swap, let's say, a TSX, like a 2004 to 2008 TSX.
We wouldn't be K-swapping that, but...
You don't have to.
Well, it comes with a K.
That's my point.
Okay.
My point is that you take that, and now if you bolt on a turbo kit.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like, yeah, I mean, do you spend some money? But like, that engine can take it. So you can have a car that makes, you know, let's say 400, 450 wheel horsepower. I mean, yeah. I know you're going to get into trans issues and different things like that.
I was actually teetering on the idea of either nitrous or a Kraftwerk supercharger back in the day.
Right.
That's what I was looking for. Turbo was not in the picture for me because it was a little bit more expensive to do.
But I mean, if you think about all the mods that you put into the car and just went straight to the turbo kit and exhaust or whatever it is, you know, yes, it's more money.
Yeah.
But like other cars, man, the BMW stuff, like I think about even like, you know, E90, you know, the E90 series, you know, platform type stuff, like those N54 motors that were in like the 335s, and you can get those cars pretty cheaply now. I mean, like those things, like it's not unheard of to find guys that are making or hear of guys on stock internals, you know, bolting on, you know, turbos, intercooler, stuff like that, making, you know, 500 horsepower.
Right. That was the biggest thing about the K20 engine back, the EP3 Honda SI one.
Yeah, of course.
Or the RSX Type S.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest thing about those engines were that you can push 500 horsepower on stock internals. That was like the biggest thing with those engines. And,
Was it the K20? I know that's the,
I guess so. Yeah, the K20, like the internals on that, I know you hate the term, but a lot of people would say bulletproof, you know, just really.
Yeah, I do hate that term.
Yeah.
I didn't realize how much until you said, I know you hate that term, but now I remember. I hate that term.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, there's those cars. I think you have, you know, let's see, BMW, I'm trying to think. But like, I mean, like back in the day, like people always took to the fact that like, and that's why I think the GTRs and the Supras really have that, you know, that big piece of the puzzle, right? Because those cars, I mean, like, you know, Supras, you know, 2JZs, like they could make 500-600 horsepower on stock internals. I've heard people say that like stock internals on a 2J are good up until like 700 horsepower, right?
Wow.
And then you have the RBs that easily could take a fair amount of power, you know, before they would really start to, you know, lose their stuff. But those cars, even on, you know, pump gas with, you know, 500 horsepower, they could take it. Like, And I think that's what I liked so much about the DSM stuff is that, you know, you could get 400 horsepower like that without spending any money on those cars. And if you had a GSX or a TSI, you know, all-wheel drive, those things were lightning off the line. And they also had, you know, enough power to really, you know, put people on edge. But man, there was something different about some of that Honda stuff that had turbos on it. My friend.
But you're saying that you would consider turbos in some cases bolt on.
I think in some cases bolt on. Yeah.
Yeah.
I do, because the truth is, like, I've done a few, you know, turbo conversions on different cars. And some of them are almost easier than doing, you know, downpipes and uppipes in a Subaru.
Yeah, I wonder, because I'm sure there are people who feel that once you have to do stuff like just relocations of maybe battery or ECU or anything like that, then they're gonna say it's not a bolt on anymore.
I understand, but some people some cars you don't even need to do that.
Yeah,
you know. And the better part was there were some cars that, like, while you couldn't run as much boost, there were some cars that came with factory turbo options that certain manifolds even use to bolt up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I think that there was a lot of things to that. I mean, I don't know. There are some cars that I would definitely say that, like, bolting on a turbo was not so difficult. Getting all the things to kind of be able to maximize the use of the turbo was the expensive stuff.
Yeah, right? One of the biggest things for the Civic that I had was, if you want to go turbo, you have to upgrade the intake manifold to an RDX, Acura RDX manifold.
Mm-hmm.
You had to do that, and right. that's like a mandatory thing.
Right.
Like, so, you know, I get it. And then in that sense, if you have all the right stuff, it does become bolt on.
I mean, but even look at your car.
Yeah.
Like, it's a 7, right? You have a Mark 7.
Mm-hmm.
Mark 7 GTI. And if what IE Engineering is saying that is real, if you could flash that car and gain what, almost 80 horsepower?
And that's the beauty of a turbo car. Like, you know, I mean,
yeah, but 80 horsepower,
I know, which is still
extensive.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? I mean, that's crazy.
And shout out to the IE guys. They're great
dudes. For sure.
And I will say, though, the one thing that also makes me feel a little skepticism is that, in the sense of when you look at the difference between a stage one and stage two from them, stage one stock, all stock,
mm-hmm.
and then, and again, flash tuning, and stage two's mandatory intake, downpipe, and then optional intercooler and stuff like that. And they're advertising not a huge gain from 1 to 2, but I feel like it should almost be backwards, where 1 to 2 should be a huge gap, and then stock to 1 should be kind of smaller.
What are the supporting modifications that you need for stage 2?
Intake, downpipe, intercooler, recommended clutch, something like that.
I mean, that's a lot.
I know, yeah.
For 15 horsepower.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, maybe there's something not 100% accurate there, or maybe your car has that fine threshold of the parts that are there and different things like that, where it can take the amount of abuse that the stock turbo has to offer.
If it was turbo upgrade, if you need a turbo upgrade for my car and you go from an IS-20 turbo to an IS-38, the Golf R1, and then they were able to just do basically stock everything else and just get the tune up to 300 and something horsepower, that makes a lot of sense to me, because then you have a Golf R.
And then you're
right in line with the numbers there.
Okay.
But on the stock turbo for the GTI, like, it just seems like a lot.
Yeah, maybe. I'm not really sure, only because I don't know those cars super intimately as far mm-hmm. as, like, you know, having tuned them or anything like that.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, I will tell you that there was, you know, plenty of Evos that it didn't really take too much to have them making, you know, 400 plus horsepower on cars that, you know, didn't have a lot of stuff done to them.
Right.
You know? So I think there's that. I mean, old school cars, some of the turbo BMWs, I think, are incredible. Like I said, the LS stuff is pretty impressive. It just takes and takes and takes. And so I think that there's a lot of cool things there. I'm trying to think, like, what other cars do you really feel are, like, I mean, I know you had the Mazda Speed.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, I don't know that I feel that car had the
Mazda Speed and the Subarus and stuff like that, everyone normally just does an access port, you know? Like,
yeah, and I think, like, those are the cars that I feel like, you know, you can definitely do some bolt-on stuff. I mean, in that case, bolt-ons do count as swapping the turbo out, right?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I think that there's other cars. I mean, R35 GTR is a good example, too. And I know it's a gob more money than most of these cars. But, you know, it puts out a fair amount of power in its stock form on stock bottom ends.
Yep.
You know, I mean, that's the appeal, I think, to a lot of the bolt-on performance, is the fact that you don't have, you're not doing an engine, you know, and then there's some other engines out there that you can get away with just, you know, putting in ARP head studs and doing certain things. And all of a sudden, like, you know, you latch that thing down and you can like really maintain and hold some power.
Right. You know, we've had sort of conversations like this in the past, and you know, where we've talked about maybe the difference between maybe kind of building your car versus just kind of doing some bolt-ons and a tune,
yeah,
or whatever it is. I mean, with, for me, the way I kind of got into cars or whatever, bolt-ons and a tune were such an effective way to get power out of your car that, like, do you think that that has taken away from a lot of people's mindsets on, like, what it means to, like, kind of improve your car? Taking more, I guess, more of an easy route than most people do?
I understand what you mean.
Yeah.
Look, I used to make this joke, you know, 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as like when I think about my brother's generation, who's only, you know, 4 or 5 years, you know, four years behind me. And I used to make a joke that if they bought a turbo kit that had everything in it to install the turbo kit, and they were missing, you know, a set of copper crush washers, the world would come to an end. Like, they wouldn't be able to source them. They wouldn't be able to figure it out. It would be like, all right, we got to tow the car to a mechanic, right? but you know, that joke was rooted out of a place of, like, I remember I was probably at the tail end of the cars that most of the car, not every car had following. You couldn't just get as many aftermarket parts. And there was a lot of things that when you needed them, you built things. Right. Like, I hate to say it because it makes it seem like it's a bad thing, but it's slightly, there's some honesty in it, which is, I feel like I'm the last generation of the Home Depot performance crew, you know,
yeah.
because there was a lot of things that we had to figure out. And, you know, and you were just kind of, you were looking for, how do we make these parts? And there weren't, you know, there was no Amazons. There weren't, you know, if you needed something, you know, you sent away for it, or you bought it on a primitive website, or you ordered it through a local speed shop, mm-hmm. and you had to wait for it to come.
I'll tell you this. I think there's definitely a level of truth there, because I'm not the Home Depot performance guy. Like, I don't
go there anymore for my performance parts, Rich.
I know, but I'm just saying that I never really did that. The closest thing is for me is that sometimes you find, depending on what platform car you have or whatever it may be, you'll find parts. People that are niche specialists, mm-hmm. for certain things to your car.
Yeah.
And then you reach out to those people. Like, that 100%. That was like the closest thing I think I did to any of that kind of stuff, where, you know, they made that one particular thing you need to make this other thing work, and that was about it.
I think what made some of the cars that we were working on so cool and in that time was that when you went to a car show, when you went to a dyno day, when you went to a shootout, you know, you got to see a bunch of other cars to see what they were doing. And it wasn't about copying ideas. You know, there was still a lot of hard work that went into it. But, like, that's how I figured out that, you know what? Like, the Q45 throttle body has a 90 millimeter size. And you can find them pretty much in every junkyard. You know, I went and bought a Infiniti Q45 throttle body. And I forget how much I got it for. It was dirt in a junkyard. Came back, rebuilt it, cleaned it up. Took my intake manifold off, you know, we cut the flange off, we ordered a piece of aluminum at the time, and we literally used paper and made a template, and we basically cut this flange out of a square
piece of aluminum.
Mm-hmm. And then I took it, at the time, I didn't have a TIG welder at the time, because back when I did this, TIG welders were large and very expensive, but like I took that to a welding shop, and they welded the flange on, and I used the Q45 throttle body, and let me tell you something, like, it was crazy,
mm-hmm.
right? So I think a lot of that was, like, you can look at some of these cars and you get to see what they're doing, and then you figure it out, all right, are there other parts from other cars that actually give me an advantage, because they don't make the part for this,
right?
Or, and so we got good.
There's a lot of cars that still kind of do that.
100%.
You know, so.
100%. But I think a lot of it is just in the fact that, like, we had to make so many more things to make our cars faster.
Yeah.
You know, exhaust systems. Yeah, there were people that some had the big dollar exhaust from, you know, whatever, and they spent all the money in the world. And then there were guys like me that ordered, you know, a bunch of stainless steel tubing and a burned stainless steel muffler and a bunch of V-band clamps, and we went to town with a welder. Like, it, you know, we didn't make crap, but, like, you know, we made stuff. And there was a lot of times that we had to figure out routes. You know, I mean, I think about the best example I can give is that, like, nowadays, let's say you have, you know, a DSM or an Evo, right? And again, I know they're old cars, but I'm just giving an example. You know, you could probably buy, you know, an AEM Infinity, whatever it is. You know, you take out the harness plugs. You know, there were plug-and-play sort of things, but you plug the plugs in. It gives you a base file. You open up the base CAL file. You load the CAL file. Configure it if you have different injectors or different things. And then you hit save, and then you start your car, and your car pretty much just runs and it drives, and then you'll take it to the tuner and get, you know, he'll fine tune everything, get some more power out of it. But like back then, we were, you know, we had AFC, super AFCs, right? Apexi super AFCs. And, you know, we were, you know, running 550 injectors was like the most we can get out of it. And then guys were pushing 650s and 720s. And a super AFC is a piggyback fuel controller. And all you can do with it is essentially fool, you know, the computer into seeing how much airflow was coming in through the mass air. And so what you were essentially doing is you were basically lying to the ECU to tell it to put more or less fuel in, right? So at the time, though, you could only compensate those AFCs about 35%. So once you got past 550 injectors, that thing didn't really do enough to, you couldn't get enough fuel out of the car for that large of an injector, right?
Right.
So then we had to come up with something else. And that's when you started seeing guys use, we were hacking masses. When you take the honeycombs off the sides of masses,
yep.
like it starts to develop like, you know, unmetered air. So you're leaning the car out in a way. Then I remember at one point we were using GM 3.5-inch mass airflow sensors. And we were using with something called a MAF translator.
Okay.
And basically it was this box that had these three dials on it so you can fine tune the amount of hertz, right? You were fooling again. So we would use that in conjunction with a super AFC. So we would take the bulk fueling out of the MAF translator, and then we would put, we'd use a super AFC to kind of fine tune. I feel like I'm losing, did I lose you here?
I'm good.
All right. So bottom line is what I'm saying is we were always looking for these things of like, how do we get to the next step? Like, how do we do this next thing? And the only way to really do it was, we went like this.
No, we're good.
Oh. the only way to really do it was by kind of coming up with these hackarounds, because there just wasn't a lot of stuff on the shelf at the time that said, put this into my car, it will work.
Right.
Bolt-on performance was just starting to become a thing.
Yeah.
So I think that's why that generation, maybe the newer generation, takes a little bit of a hit for it, because it's like, you know, they drop their car off, they don't want to have anything to do with it, just make my car faster, I'll come pick it up.
I think it's really hard to maybe have to decide to, or even think about going down the route similar to what you used to do.
I'm not saying people should. It doesn't, you don't need to today.
Right, and I wouldn't be advocating for it either, but you know, it's hard when you get companies that do the R&D, companies that put in that kind of
extra. I don't think it's hard. I think it's awesome.
Well, no, but it's hard to maybe go a different route if you want to be really particular on what you get out of it or whatever it is, or maybe just make it a little bit better.
Right.
It's hard when you get the companies that put the R&D into the stuff and they go, this is the part for your car. Like this,
I understand.
You know, like that all of a sudden, and I'm just like, damn it, I'm sold.
And I think that makes tuning cars better for a lot of people.
Yeah.
Make good quality parts, buy good quality parts. You don't have the years of trying to figure out how to make these parts, the years of trial and error, the years of, you know, trials and tribulations.
But then I think it does result in what you were saying with your joke on if you're missing a couple of copper crush wall, you know, whatever it is, and all of a sudden you got to tow the car because of it. Like, that's funny.
Listen, no difference in the schools that are allowing kids to come up with the use of calculators, right?
Right.
We have to sit there with pencil and paper and figure that stuff out.
I saw a video of college students trying to do basic math, and it was... Yo, it frightening. Was frightening.
Yeah, I mean, like, don't send them to the moon.
Let alone that I don't think that they can read.
One, Houston, we have a problem, and they're going into space forever.
I don't think that they can also read time off a regular clock, and they can't write in script.
My God.
Like that kind of stuff is crazy, man.
I'll be honest with you. I'm going to be 100% honest. Because of the fact that I use a computer so much now, when I have to write anything, I struggle. I do. Well, like, I'll start writing, and then all of a sudden it trails off into something I can't read, and then I'm like, wait, how do you? And it takes me forever to write now.
You know, me and Max are always scribbling away on our notepads. Like, so at least I'm fresh with that.
It frustrates me so much because I can sit down and write an email in 12 seconds. If I have to write a letter, I'm there for a while.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. But I don't know. I just think that like there's a big difference in bolt-on performance today versus what it was then.
Yeah,
like. There just is. But, I'm sorry. I'm going to cut you off. Because if I'm going to lose my thought.
Do it. That's fine.
But I will say this. That same ingenuity in that kind of thing that's been instilled in me into having to build those parts, having to do that, it didn't go away because there's bolt-on shit for my car. I said a bad word. I didn't mean to.
It's okay.
But with that said.
I didn't pick up on it.
I understand. But with that said. You know, like I made diff brackets. I made, I've made engine dampeners, like from my car. You know, I mean, yeah, you could buy it, but it's not like what I built, right? Like it's different. Like, you know, we've done heat shields. We've done, you know, some custom different things to some of the parts. Like I've modified some of the exhaust parts and some of the different things, you know, and a lot of interior things. And I think just the nature of me wanting to do that is. Because I don't look at parts like just bolt them on. I look at them like, how do I make something better? And if it happens to be the part that I just bought, I'll destroy it and modify it and put it back together. Versus I think a lot of people that would bolt it on and if they're unhappy with something, they'd be like, oh.
You know? Got to get a new part?
Got a new part.
Yeah, that's kind of the way my brain would go, which is so
like, this crappy. Isn't good. I'm going to sell this. I don't like this.
Yep.
It would if I bought something and I was going to lose my rear on it, trying to get rid of it to buy something different, I absolutely would just destroy it and put it back together.
On my Civic, I went through probably every single bolt-on part that I had on my car at least twice, and that was for the reason of trial and error. First time I did it, cheapo parts, kind of learning the whole thing through it, and then the second time around, it was, oh, I know better. And then I did it to my liking, truly, second time around, and there was a level of crap that didn't work. Let's start over. Let's sell this. Let's get rid of it and go on the next one. Where the thought never came across my head, let's make it better. Without having to go that route.
One of my friends, he just got done and he bought like a lot of these chassis braces for his car.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, you got time. I just want to cruise over. I want to show you this stuff.
Yep.
He brings it over to me and the welds suck.
Oh.
I mean, they're terrible. Absolutely awful. And he says, like, yo, he's like, they powder coated it and like they just to try to make it look like so it they just hide they try to hide what was there, you know? And he's like, I don't even want to put the stuff on my car. So we literally cut off all the flanges at the end of those pipes and the different pieces, and I rewelded all the stuff for him so that it like the welds looked decent, everything looked good, it fit good. There wasn't, you know, there's a couple things that like even when they put the chassis brace up, like he put it up, it like was hitting part of the subframe and like the lower control arm, not the lower control arm, the bracket on the subframe that holds. Look, and so I cut that section out and we just literally got some, you know, some rectangular tubing and we kind of made the thing for it, welded it back in. I mean, it's mint, right? But I guess what I'm saying is like never was there a thought of like, oh, We're just gonna have to look for some new stuff to buy. It was like, hold on a second, let me go into the bin.
Yeah, yeah, right.
You know what I mean? And that's why, like, I think I'm so adamant about having welders, having tools, like, because I feel like they are my freedom.
Yeah,
it's the ability to like, I don't care what happens, I will fix it.
Yeah,
and when I can't fix it, I'll go down with the ship.
You know, it's funny because like when I was buying more parts and stuff like that and kind of putting more money into my cars or whatever it was, like I always had to take the priority of do I want the parts or I want the tools? Never had the tools. And I told you this before and I remember the face you made the first time I told you. I don't think I've reiterated it, but my mom watches this podcast.
Does she?
Yeah, she does.
I'm so happy she to does. Have one more listener.
So my mom mom watches the podcast. She's gonna die laughing out of this. Is growing up, we didn't have tools in my house. It's just we don't really have a lot of tools. You know, the toolkit in my house was
breaking my heart. An
IKEA toolkit is what we had in my house. So anytime I wanted to buy parts or do anything on my car, whatever it may be, it was always...
You had to go to IKEA.
No. It was... I had to,
I'll take some meatballs and a screwdriver.
That sounds pretty good. And that's basically how it went. But you got to hit someone up. You got to hit up a friend. You got to know somebody, whatever it was. I always had to go somewhere else. I couldn't just go and do it myself. It was either, hey, I just scrounged up enough money to get this part. Step two, didn't think it through. How am I going to get this on? Don't know yet.
My entire life, and I say this, I don't know if my entire life, definitely from when I was 16 on. I think my mom, my mom doesn't watch this podcast, but what I would say is she would probably agree with me that I've always been the person that when I got into something, I wanted the tools to do it myself, right? That's how I, you know, if I played a sport, if I did something, like I wanted all the tools to be able to maintain whatever equipment I had or whatever it was. When I got into cars, the first thing I was into with cars was actually stereo stuff, right? So with car stereo stuff, like when it came down to, like I put all my stuff in the first time, had to figure it out, it was probably garbage. But then it was like, you know, every time my friend had something that he wanted to install, like I would try to install it. And then most of the time it was good, a couple times went bad, learned a lot from it, put it back in. And then it was like all of a sudden, like I was doing a lot of these things and I got, when I was in college, I was working part-time for a stereo shop. And I learned a lot more stuff about electronics and different things there. And at the same time, I was kind of getting into that whole, like, in high school, I kind of liked performance, but, like, I owned a 92 Camry.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you know, not really going to do too much with that.
Yep.
And then when I got into college and, you know, I started messing with some other cars, now all of a sudden I was working in a stereo place, but I realized that I really didn't like this stuff anymore. I wanted to really get into, you know, the performance side. And so... Then I was installing my own stuff and taking my own stuff apart and occupying my mom's kitchen table with transmissions and, you know, and so, but every step of the way, it was like, I don't want to take my car somewhere. I want to get the tools. I want to do this myself. And then when it really gets to a point where I can't do this myself, then I'll have to go source somebody else to either help me.
Yeah.
Or I have to take it to a place and say, hey, like, you know, I tried to do this and I suck. Can you help me?
Right.
And then you meet, and this is my favorite part about the car community. Genuinely met some of my best lifelong friends through cars. Mm-hmm. And, you know, these are the people that you lean on to, you know, to do things, and you're there for them, and, you know, and they'll be there for you. And, you know, they teach you things and they help you with things. And yeah, they call you a schmuck why they help you redo things and they make fun of you. But they make fun of you because, you know, because they love you. Right. Yeah. And like, you know, even the other night, my car friend that I've known for a million years, like he's also, I build wheels. He builds ACs. Right. Like he's a HVAC guy. And my air conditioner went out in the middle of the day. And I was like, you know, Dave, I don't know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, yo, try this, do this. And then he's walking me through it over FaceTime in the dark. You know what I mean? Like,
yep.
But this is what it is. Like, even with that, I'm not going to call anybody. So I do things at my house. I do my own stuff. It, like, I don't like being a slave to somebody else.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think we did both on performance here.
Yeah.
I think we did it.
Yeah.
So first off, before we get out of here, thank you to Mrs. Waters for watching the podcast. You are single-handedly holding the podcast on your back and making sure that we have at least one view count.
An Instagram live viewer brought to my attention we don't say the name of our podcast enough.
It's the Koenig Behind the Wheel podcast.
There we go. But people do have to search it if they want to watch it. Say they see the clips out there on social media, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Just for them to know, it's the
Koenig Behind the Wheel podcast.
There you go.
And you can find it on Stitcher, Google Play, iTunes,
iHeartRadio,
and Spotify. Right.
Apple Music.
Those five. And maybe you'll find somebody else that's stealing it and putting it on their channel. That's
Apple
cool
Music,
too.
YouTube, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, go get it. I mean, listen, I don't know that I would personally want to listen to myself as I drive, but that shouldn't discourage you.
Don't sell it short. Listen to the podcast, and yeah, we'll see you next time, right?
Pretty much.
All right, see you.